Everyone, welcome to KUA's meeting of July 7th. Please join me in the Pledge Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We move on to item C, which is approval of agenda. Can I have a motion?
Motion to accept.
Approve today?
Motion to accept.
Seconded.
Do I? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is it going to be with just the two?
And then awards and presentations.
Anyone opposed? Please say nay. No one opposed, so motion approved. Next, we go into awards and presentation. Brian, please.
Yes, Madam Chair. You know, we have four service awards, but these four individuals
are ancients.
Have a lot of experience here in KUA and serving our community. First service award for this afternoon is Mr. Javier Sierra. Where are you? There you are. Come on up. IT systems administrator in our IT department will recognize the Javi for 15 years of service. Congratulations, Javi. Thank you. Mr. Santos, Jeffrey Santos, is a principal engineer within our operations department, mainly handling our transmission, construction, and maintenance activities. He's not able to be here, but we're recognizing him for 20 years of service. Anyway, Mr. Sizemore, come on up here. Jeffrey Sizemore is a senior engineer in our operations department in our distribution engineering area. We're recognizing Jeff for 30 years of service to KUA and this community.
Great.
Mr. Yellington, come up here. Scott Yellington is our supervisor of mechanics at our Cane Island facility. We're recognizing Scott for 35 years of service to KUA. Next, we've got our Employee of the Month for July 2021, Mr. Enrique Candelaria. Enrique is our Acting Supervisor of Relay, although he's held numerous classifications here at KUA. Here's what one of your fellow employees had to say about you. Ricky is the personification of the ideal KUA employee. He has worked hard in various roles within the company, including meter reader, power plant mechanic and operator, relay technician, engineer, and now in his current acting role as supervisor of relay. He managed to earn his bachelor's in electrical engineering while working full-time here at KUA. In his role as substationer, he has completed breaker projects, relay upgrades, line and transformer projects, the Ken Davis generator and safety enhancements, like the recent hotline and ground pickup projects. He is a leader that all personnel in the substation look to for direction and support. Through all of this responsibility, Ricky's enthusiasm never wanes. He consistently seeks ways to encourage the team while maintaining project's timing. Thank you. And I won't, don't run off.
Well, those that are here, but we'll begin with our chair, Ethel Urbina.
Felicidades, Enrique. Very smart. Enrique Candelaria, felicidades.
Thank you. Director Ray Hemphill.
Congratulations. Here's a
day off with pay, as well as a... Sure.
Thank you.
Does this go with his stuff?
No, that's not it.
That's fine? Okay.
He's got one.
He's got one? Okay.
Vice Chairman Ortega.
Congratulations. Here's some money for your day off.
And Mayor Olga Gonzalez.
Congratulations.
Let's let him hear it, y'all.
So next, we're going to hear the audience. Is there anyone who needs to approach the board? Please come forward. Seeing none, we go on to the next item. Consent agenda.
Make a motion.
Do I have a motion?
Motion to accept.
Anyone in favor?
Aye.
Anyone against the nay? All in favor? Motion approved. Public hearing. We have a resolution for the approval of budget for 2022. Anyone in the audience who wishes to have any comments or questions on the budget, in person or online?
Madam Chair, we've got Kevin Crawford, Vice President of Finance and Administration, to highlight the budget.
Madam Chair, Board, good afternoon. Kevin Crawford, Vice President, Finance and Administration, here to give you a brief overview, just a few slides to accompany the multiple slides that you all had seen on previous occasions and in the documents that you have reviewed with respect to our annual budget for fiscal year 22. And as we typically do at this time, we just kind of go back and look and show you what got us to the place where we are tonight to present to you this budget for your adoption. April 7th, we gave you a preliminary budget meeting. We looked at the budgeting process, at capital levels and staffing levels, and you provide guidance at that point. And then at our June 2nd meeting, we gave you the budget review meeting where we talked about the O&M, which is the third component of our significant component of our budget. And then today we have our public budget hearing to recommend your formal adoption of the budget. And as always, we do have an alternate date scheduled for August 4th, which we have not ever had to use in recent memory, but this just provides us enough time in case there is another meeting required to meet the charter for the City of Kissimmee with a 45-day advance notice, only if that were to be necessary. And October 1st is the new budget fiscal year beginning. And so some of the highlights that I think we've shared with you in previous meetings, but I think deserve comment again at this point, is this current budget that we presented to you for fiscal year 22 does comply with the current fiscal policies that the board has asked us to achieve over the five-year plan. As you know, the budget looks at a five-year horizon. You only approve 1 year in advance, but we do look forward 5 years. And so over that time period, we do meet all of your fiscal policies that you've prescribed for KUA. We also reflect in this budget no staffing, staffing decrease of two full-time equivalents in fiscal year 22, as well as no additional staffing increases projected over that five-year plan. Also, we do not have any base rate increases projected over the five-year horizon. However, as in all budgets, our fuel and purchase power portion of the rate will fluctuate with costs as a pass-through to customers and a true-up on a monthly basis. And then our rate stabilization is also utilized to achieve that bottom one-third goal metric that the board has asked us to achieve. And then finally, our commercial paper debt retired over the five-year plan. And so that's the last remaining portion of commercial paper debt on our books. And we showed you that a few years ago, our plan to pay that all off. And we anticipate continuing to follow that plan according to what we've previously showed you. So as I like to see this, or as I see it, all good news, all good points, a very healthy budget, a healthy bottom line. And so just to get into a couple more details, one additional point that we do not anticipate issuing any additional debt over that five-year horizon. So about as good as a budget can hope to be with respect to our fiscal objectives, we're very happy to bring that to you. Just to give you an overview, you've seen this in much greater detail, but this is just sort of our cash flow receipts side of the equation. Our total revenues and other sources, and you see this complies with the resolution that's also included in your packets, of a total revenues and sources of $238,516,000. inclusive of all revenue sources. And then on the operating expense side, total expenses and other uses also equal to $238,516,000, which therefore equates to a balanced budget. And then finally, what we would recommend as staff for you this evening, Board, in your consideration, is to authorize the fiscal year 22 budget of the $238,516,000, again, assuming no base rate increases, and authorizing 287 full-time equivalent positions. And therefore, we recommend approval in that manner of resolution number 21-03, adopting the fiscal year 22 annual budget. And I stand for any questions that you may have.
Anybody has any questions here or remotely?
No. I'm going to make a motion to accept the recommendation by Vice President.
Anyone in agreement? Say aye. For the motion.
She can't hear.
We have a motion.
I second it.
Motion approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I may indulge the Board for just 1 second, I would like to thank my staff formally for their hard work. Noel Arock is here. This is his first year. He came on board about this time last year, went through the entire budget year, and then fully completed the budget process. And I just want to commend him and his staff on an outstanding job at his first year. So we're real grateful for them and their hard work. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you, Board.
Yes, Brian.
Just a point of clarification. We had a motion and a second. We just need a vote.
Okay. Anyone in favor?
Aye.
Everybody against? Nay. Motion approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We're now going to informational presentations, Brian.
Yes, Madam Chair, we have three informational presentations this afternoon. I'm going to ask Tiffany Henderson, our Director of Corporate Communications, to come up and introduce the first two informational presentations.
Good afternoon. We have with us today Leslie Hanna. She's a board member with the Guardian Ad Litem Foundation of Osceola, Inc. Their mission is to support the best interest of abused, neglected, and abandoned children in Osceola County. Guardian Ad Litem Foundation of Osceola, Inc. has received $5,000 in sponsorship funds from KUA in this budget year, and I'll let Leslie take it away.
Hello, thank you for having me here today. I love seeing everybody in person. That's great. Again, my name is Leslie Hanna. I'm with the Guardian Ad Litem Foundation here for Osceola County, and I have a short video, I promise it's not long, that I wanted to share with you guys before I give my official thank you. So.
I am for the child who has been abused, the child who is afraid to go home.
Who thinks it's her fault? Was forced to keep the secret or else.
I am for the child who has been neglected.
The child who does not know where his next meal is coming from.
Who must fend for herself and her little sister.
Alone.
The child who has never been to a doctor or a dentist.
I am for the child who was taken away
for her own protection.
The child who is now in foster care. Who does not know how long he'll be there.
Or who these people are.
Or if she should trust them. I am for her.
The child who is in his third,
fourth, fifth,
sixth foster home this year.
The child who has attended 4 schools in 2 years.
Who sits in back of yet another class surrounded by strangers.
Believing in his heart that no one
cares. I am for her. The child who has never been told
that he is loved.
That she is smart, beautiful,
talented,
worthy, that she is strong,
courageous,
that she is somebody. I am for her.
The child who one day will turn 18 and will be surrendered to the world.
I am for that child.
So I am there for that child.
To listen to her.
To speak for her.
To champion without compromise for what's in his best interest.
Because if I am
there for her, I know she will be half as likely to languish in foster care
and that much more likely to find a safe, permanent home.
She is the child I am for.
He is the child I am for.
They are the children I am for.
She is the child I am for.
The child I am for? It's him.
Who am I?
Who am I?
Who am I?
I am a volunteer child advocate.
I am you.
It gets me every time. I always say, I'm not going to cry. I'm one of those weepy girls. So I grew up in a small town in Virginia where we didn't have a whole lot of, community support like I can see here in Osceola County and our surrounding counties. And my mom was the mom who would take in the kids when they would show up at the police department taken from their home that hadn't been placed in the foster care system yet. We were the ones that on Christmas morning would take in a family or two or kids here and there and try to be the voice outside of the courtroom. So I was delighted when I moved here to Osceola County a little over 10 years ago to find out that the Guardian Ad Litem program not only helps to be able to be a voice in the classroom and the courtroom, but also we have a foundation that gives back to make maybe our kids have a little bit more of a sense of normalcy, where if they want to go to prom or they want to have a birthday party or if they want art lessons or they need new sneakers or maybe they've never had a hoodie, we're the ones that make sure that those kids have that. And we do that because of your support. And I say that with the most sincerity of it takes the feet on the ground to be able to get to the children, to be able to have the volunteers to be there. But there's a lot more behind that. And your dollars, literally your donation and your support, helps us bring a reality of normalcy to these children. 2 years ago, we had a 15-year-old that literally had never had a birthday party. She said, I want a birthday party, but I don't have friends that would come. Who would come? I don't have a family. So what did we do? We took our board, all of our families, all of our friends. We had over 100 people that filled Kissimmee Bay. And because of donations with you and our community coming together, we gave her the most amazing quinceañera that she ever could have asked for. And I know that made a difference in her life. You know, we've had children over the years that literally have said, you know, I've never had a hoodie. I've never had anything new. So because of your donation, you literally are able to help make a difference in these kids' lives. I invite you not just to continue the support because we appreciate that, but I invite you if you feel that there's a personal draw, if you're one of those like me that's always wanted to have a house full of children, this is my way of being able to give back too. I'm happy to be able to bring you guys in, to be able to be a part of any of those opportunities that we have with the community to help with the kids. If there's over 500 children right here in Osceola County that you guys help support year in and year out. I know the impact is going to be far well received just beyond the initial contact that we have or, you know, the help that we give, you know, with a teacher that reaches out to us and says, hey, you know, Susan is having a little bit of trouble this month. Can you just take her out and go shopping, you know, or having that additional phone call? Or this last year has been really, really tough. Think about it. A lot of these children are not only facing, you know, some pretty difficult decisions in a courtroom, and they've got someone that's appointed to be able to be their friend and to be their voice and to be their advocate, but they're doing it online. They haven't had that face-to-face interaction. They haven't had that avenue of being in the school to have the teacher be able to tell, you know, us or have them to be able to tell us, you know, what they need. And being able to have those guardian ad litems and our volunteer advocates that are there, we're able to not have to say no. We're able to be there face-to-face, to be in person, even despite the pandemic and those types of things where other counties don't have that. Because of each of you, we're able to make a difference in these kids' lives. So I am so thankful and humbled to be here today and grateful for the opportunity for you guys to support us over the years and to support all of the children. And again, if there's any way that you'd like to be able to get more involved, I'm happy to be able to help with that as well. So are there any questions about what we do or how the funds are spent? Or no. Literally every single dollar goes back to the kids.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
We also have with us today Tammy Douglas, the Executive Director of Help Now of Osceola, Inc., and their organization provides safety, empowerment, and healing for survivors of domestic violence and influences change, social change in the community. Help Now of Osceola, Inc. has received $10,000 in sponsorship funds from KUA in this budget year, which is consistent with previous years. And I'll turn it over now to Tammy Douglas.
Good afternoon. It's always an honor and a privilege to be here with you this afternoon. Help Now is approaching our celebration of our 40th year operating here in Osceola County. And the survivors that we serve here in this community are so immensely impacted by your support and the trust that you put in us in helping those survivors. This year has been a tremendously difficult year for every single one of us. Safer at home has not been safer for survivors of domestic violence who have experienced coercive control in their homes. So while the rest of us are hunkering down at home, experiencing a little bit of safety and reprieve from a pandemic, people who have experienced abuse and have an abusive, a controlling abuser in their home, oftentimes experienced a much heightened sense of that abuse because that abuser now has much stronger control over them. So this year, while many people were working remotely and changing their operations, Help Now continued to provide that safety, empowerment, and healing for the survivors that we serve. Our doors remained open every single day through the pandemic, not only at the shelter, but through our outreach advocacy center this year. And while we added platforms to be able to meet the needs of survivors in various different ways, like a text line for help and a chat feature on our website, and doing some counseling virtually for those who are comfortable with it, we still offered people an opportunity to come in and find refuge and services and support services through our Outreach Advocacy Center. Domestic violence, I'm sure most of you are, you've seen my face here a number of times, but so the services that we provide are not brand new to most of you, so I'll kind of skim through this. But domestic violence affects so many people, and it's every end of the socioeconomic sphere, so it can affect anyone, both men and women, and Help Now does provide services for men and women, predominantly women. About 85 to 90% of the survivors that we serve are female, but it does happen to men as well. We offer the 24-hour crisis line available, and we're going to look real quickly at the number of folks who have called in and received help and support. Our shelter services, where we offer people a place to come and find refuge. Sometimes folks come with nothing but the clothes on their back as they're fleeing abuse. Outreach services, or it's an advocacy center that we have where quite a number of different types of services, counseling, support groups, and things of that nature. During the last year, we were also able to open a food pantry to provide some extra resources for survivors coming in to visit us who are experiencing food insecurity through our outreach center. Court advocates are available actually on site in the courthouse when they want to apply for orders for protection or an injunction against an abuser. We have several special projects and programs that we're working with that we've increased our capacity. We have an IFP, an Injunction for Protection attorney project. We employ three attorneys who provide free legal support and representation when a survivor needs to receive that order for protection. We have an economic justice project where we are actually working with survivors who experienced economic abuse, which is an enormously impactful way that abusers control. And so we help offer help with finding jobs, getting job placement, repairing credit, because oftentimes abusers find ways to control a survivor by ruining their credit and things of that nature. We have a trauma-informed project. Help Now is selected as one of three certified domestic violence centers in the state of Florida to facilitate a trauma-informed project as a pilot so that we can help share our experiences that we have developed with the rest of the other 42 centers in the state of Florida. We also have a child welfare project. You may well know that domestic violence is one of the highest reasons why children are removed from family. So we have a child welfare project to help try and work with maintaining families and keeping them safe and together and meet the needs of those survivors and their children. We're not just an agency focusing on the survivor, but keeping the family safe because those children and those families are also victims of the domestic violence. We have a primary prevention program where we are also working with the school district to offer education to young people to prevent the cycle of abuse by offering them an education program called Expect Respect, where they learn about healthy relationships to prevent that cycle of violence. We also have an elder abuse project that is a partnership between the Council on Aging, the State's Attorney's Office, and the Sheriff's Office to impact survivors, elders who are abused, not only in domestic violence, but in any kind of elder abuse way. So that's been an exciting project that we have had the honor of seeing as well. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we are certainly honored every year to receive the support from KUA in a variety of ways. Many of your staff come out and support us in our education and awareness efforts, come out and do special projects at the shelter, beautify things, provide meals and things of that nature. And that kind of work is really impactful and meaningful. But sending community messages of safety and empowerment and healing is something we all have a part to play. And KUA has been instrumental in helping us resonate that message. We also hold a candlelight vigil, and we invite all of your staff and certainly the board to come out and stand up with us to honor those that have lost their lives to domestic violence and honor the survivors who continue to fight and to celebrate all of us that come together in the community to work against this violence. Your support means a huge impact. With your help, victims become survivors. In the past year, we have together, KUA, through their support, has helped us to shelter 229 victims, 11,170 bed nights of safe shelters have kept people safe. In the past year, we've had 2,589 callers on our hotline. 7,369 individuals receive safety plans. And those were individualized safety plans to their specific needs. And we provided 9,649 hours of counseling and support to folks who reach out to us. In the past year, 5,910 individuals have received intervention and prevention services through HelpNow. So we really want to take this brief moment and just say thank you so incredibly much for your ongoing, continued, and amazing support. We could not do this work without you. I try to make sure that everybody understands the resources that we're able to get by the match contribution. We use your donation as a federal match contribution so that we can match those dollars and bring in more resources to support our community. So in addition to the financial support, which is amazing, your staff has been incredible in coming out and supporting survivors in many, many meaningful ways over the years. So we're grateful for that continued partnership and support. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you.
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Next. Yes, Madam Chair, the last informational presentation of the afternoon is a presentation that some of you may recall the board was given back in 2019 by Jacob Williams, CEO of FMPA. We've asked him to come back and provide that presentation again with updated numbers for our new members of the board. So, Mr. Jacob.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the rest of the board and Mayor. We're delighted to be here to tell basically your story, tell the story of what a wonderful thing KUA does in this community. We had the pleasure of supplying all the power, but, of course, you operate the units that provide much of the power to us. So wanted to provide that background. I think everyone knows FMPA provides or has 31 members. We provide electricity in parts or fully to 24 of the 31 communities, as noted there. These 31 communities in the state of Florida represent about 12% of the Floridians, or 2.6 million people. So it's a very, very big operation. Our power supply that supplies the members that we serve is 80% natural gas, 13% coal and declining, and 5% nuclear. Of the 80% that's natural gas, three-quarters of that, or two-thirds of that, is power that's generated at the Kane Island generating station right here. And I'll go on and talk about the wonderful things that in a moment that goes on there, but it's part of the backbone of FMPA and the low-cost power. A few of the goals that we have briefly are to provide you all with wholesale power at $70 a megawatt hour or less for the next several years. In a moment, you'll see why that's important. To work with all our members to have reliability of at least 60 minutes or less outage time. KUA is well below that. I mean, they're one of the best in the state in terms of minimal outage time. So we're not having to work much with KUA. It's some of the others that are a little bit higher that we work with. And finally, reducing our emissions profile for the generation fleet. One thing that was apparent from the very beginning coming down here 5 years, it's been 5 years since I came down here, is price of electricity matters in Florida, unlike almost any other state in the nation, for a few reasons. One, we use a lot. We use twice as much electricity here per person as you do in California, New York. Okay, it's hot and humid. You know, everyone knows that. The second thing is that the average incomes in many of our communities are well below the U.S. average, and they're actually well below the Florida average. And many of our communities, like KUA, the Kissimmee community, is below the municipal average that we have. And therefore, what that means is a greater proportion of your customers' incomes go to pay the electric bill than if you had an income of double that amount or something. So it's keenly aware, plus you use a lot. Another thing to think about is around there's 30% of the Floridians who are on fixed or low income that pay upwards of 10% of their disposable income to pay the electric bill. It's a big deal. We're proud to say that in the last 10 years or 11 years now, the price of electricity from FMPA has gone down by 36% to the city of Kissimmee. What that means in terms of dollars for all the members, if you add it up, that's around $200 million less annually that the cities are paying now as compared to back in 2009. Now, KUA is 25% of FMPA's customers. So, you know, you're talking about something like $50 million that your customers are paying less now than they did back in 2009. That's a lot of money, and that's a lot of value to the community, and they can spend money on other things, food, medicines, you know, education, et cetera. So that's great. Part of the reason we can provide the low-cost power goes directly to the plants. This is a listing of the three major combined cycle units. These are the workhorses of FMPA, Treasure Coast down at Fort Pierce and then Kane Island 3 and 4. One of the beautiful things about it is the plants are available to run far more than the national average. Since there are low-cost plants, we want them to run as much as possible. Well, they're seven to almost 10 percentage points higher than the national average. And that's not the national average for municipals. That's the national average for all the investor-owned utilities, all the major companies like FPL, Duke, et cetera. And this isn't a one-year blip that happened in 2020. This has been a 10, 12-year historical thing that the plants are always available more. The team does a great job, Larry and Jay and Bill and Jason Terry, who was there before he moved over, done a great job of making sure the maintenance on the plants is done so they don't trip offline, because we want our low-cost plants available to keep the cost low. And you all do a great job in that, and we much appreciate that. But really, the story is about you all and what value this utility brings to the community of Kissimmee. And there are many ways to do it. We could talk about all the things. You know, you've had some of the presentations on the social good that you do in the community. But let's talk about dollars and cents for a little bit and say this is what this provides. Your rates to KUA customers are $31 million less than if your customers were served by Duke. That's $31 million that the community has to spend on other things. That's irreplaceable value. And additionally, you're moving the portfolio. You're getting cleaner as we go, adding solar. You're one of the leaders in the area, be about 12% of your energy will be carbon-free by 2023, staying very cost-effective, but still moving in that direction. You all provide an $18 million transfer annually to the city. That's a source of revenue, and Madam Mayor, I believe that's probably the biggest single contribution to the city comes from the electric utilities, my guess, or something along that line. The other thing is that you provide a huge economic base in terms of jobs. The utility has around 287 jobs. That money is spent here in town, you know, and if this utility didn't exist, those jobs wouldn't be here, and that's a big deal. And we'll talk about reliabilities and community support, et cetera. All those things are a big piece. You add it all up, and that's $61 million of economic value that the utility puts back to the city every year. That's a big deal. And we'll take you through a little bit of the buildup of each just to lay it up. The first one's rather straightforward. Your rates in red for residential compared to blue, the Duke rates, there's about a 25-30% difference in the residential rate. That ends up meaning that an individual customer on average pays around $350 less because they're on your system than if they're on the Duke system. I know I'm on the Duke system, and I pay more.
You see me.
Yes. You know, $350 to an average family is meaningful, you know, and that's the kind of value you bring. And similar, your commercial as well. You add up all your customers, that's $31 million. So that's just pure economics. The second thing is your move in the solar. Because you all are a municipal utility, you have chosen how much you want to move your resources to cleaner energy, and you're one of the leaders in the area. You got 50 megawatts of solar that's coming on by 2024 on top of your nuclear participation that you have, and you're one of the leaders in. And several of you were out, Mayor, you were out at the grand opening a few weeks ago at the solar site. It's quite a nice thing. Yeah, you're participating in one of the largest municipal projects for solar in the country. And there will be more coming online. And the biggest thing about that is all of our cities, and you all in particular, said, we want solar, but it's got to be cost effective. We don't want to double or triple the price of electricity to say we're green. We want to keep our costs low. Our customers demand it, but we want to keep moving that way. Well, the big utility scale projects do that. That's why you're in. It then led to one of the big things that you all did immediately is you work with the city, and the city's facilities are all now 100% fed by solar power, and they have a special rate to do that. The city didn't have to spend a bunch of money up front, no capital, didn't have to change all the buildings around or anything. They could just say, hey, I'll pay a little bit more, fix my rate for a long term. And it's a great thing for the city. You were the first city in the state to be 100% solar for your city facility, so congratulations. And now you're out offering that same kind of opportunity to residential and commercial customers around the city, which is great. City transfer. Again, $18 million is transferred from the utility annually over to the city. The kind of strong economic performance the utility has allows you to do that. If utilities rates were really high, all of a sudden, it wouldn't, you know, that'd be a tougher nut to crack because you'd have to keep the, you know, and give up margin, but you guys have created enough margin that you can move that to the city, and it's great. The 287 local jobs that you have here, again, if you think about what those jobs are, if there was another utility running here, I guarantee you wouldn't have 280 jobs here in Kissimmee. There may be, you know, 20 or 30 jobs here, but there wouldn't be 287 here. And for this city, that's relatively high-paying jobs. I mean, these are good family jobs that can support families with all the benefits that you offer. And so it's an impact of around $10 million a year on the economy of Kissimmee. So a neat thing to have. Now we move to reliability of your electric system. And today is actually a perfect day to talk about this. Brian and Larry are smiling really big today. You can measure reliability in several ways. Let's just talk about two of them. And in both cases, Kissimmee has done an outstanding job of doing it. Number one is to say, if there is a major hurricane, how fast do you get your customers back compared to everybody else in this area that was impacted similarly? Well, this chart shows in red, when Irma came through back in 2017, the customers in KUA came back much quicker. In other words, 100% of the customers who were out, how many were left without power the next day? And it was down to about 30%, where if you looked at the other utilities in blue, they were still almost 80% of the customers who were out were still at the next day. So on average, you got customers back about 2 days to 3 days faster than those that are in the surrounding area, which meant, you know, Larry and the team and they all went to work and said, hey, we only take care of Kissimmee customers, and so all the resources went that way, and that's a big deal. It's about $1 million of value if you take all the lost energy sales. There's a lot of value there. The other way to look at it is just day-to-day, and just like today, it wasn't a major hurricane. You had no outages. Your system is hardened. It is well put together. It's as good as any system in the state. Your duration, if you look at, this is a listing of certain reliability things, and I'll focus on the duration column. Your customers have an average outage time of 38 minutes a year. That's outstanding. There is an investor in utility who's that good. Okay, that's outstanding stuff. Compared to the investor-owned utility close, Duke, you're less than half the outage time per year. That means, you know, that's a kind of response that says, hey, customers don't have to think about putting in backup generators here because they know KUA is going to get the lights back on. You had no outages this time. I saw some of the others. They did. But your system is hardened. You've got great facilities in place. You've undergrounded many places that are really important. You know, this is a long-term effort that your team has went through to do it. It's not by accident that these numbers show up the way they did. So hats off again to the team for that. That's value that is almost priceless. You can't put a value on what that means to know that even in a major storm, I'm going to be back in service. I remember in Irma, power was out to our office building on the Duke system, and I came down here and worked out of one of your conference rooms for a couple days because you had power. But then there's the other things you provide and your great community partners. You know, I've been around to see enough of the movies in the park. I mean, that in and of itself is a priceless thing you do. It brings the community together. It's great. Whether it's other things you do is the scholarships, community events like the 4th of July parades and fireworks, the MLK and Viva Osceola. You got art competition for your calendars, I believe, and all the things that go on there. A number of scholarships that you promote in the community. You provide funds to many of the not-for-profits here. You add that value up, and the economic value we see is about $300,000, but it's probably much more than that because what do you put a value on movies in the park? I mean, you roll out some equipment, but the community comes together and bonds there. I don't know how it's a unique thing that you all do, which is great. The last area of value that you have is you have local control. Nobody who has a concern with things that go on at the electric utility, they don't have to go up to Tallahassee to argue at the PSC. They can show up right here and talk to you. You interact with the citizens, and you can deal with issues as you see it. That's local community, and that's great. And the results have been outstanding. You've got a well-run utility that's low cost, that's highly reliable. What more could you do in a great partner with the city? So you add it all up, and again, there's an economic value that's over $60 million a year that this utility provides the city. On top of that, so many other intangibles, and just wanted to sing the praises of the team here and what an excellent job they're doing, and you all ought to be proud. With that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Thank you,
Benjamin. Wonderful. All righty. Thank you.
Thank you, Jacob.
We move on to old business.
There are no items under old business today. There are two items under new business, Madam Chair. The first is a recommendation to approve a set of easements for the extension of Floral Boulevard. And here to tell us a little bit more about that is Kevin Crawford.
Thank you. Madam Chair, as Brian mentioned, we recommend today bring to you an approval for Flora Boulevard extension easements between KUA and the First Industrial LP in City of Kissimmee. These types of easements, as you know, if you've seen the road work, and I think it's been anticipated for some time now, the connection of Laurel Boulevard over to John Young Parkway, which abuts the north piece of the KUA property, which is on the backside of Lackey and Davis. And so what they have asked for is a temporary construction easement for the parking and staging of those construction vehicles, as well as a permanent slope easement that provides drainage into the creek, which bounds us, I think, on the western and southwestern side of the property. But that drainage into the creek for retention, and on days like today, certainly that would be something that would that obviously be helpful for that construction to move forward. But it's the same as a temporary easement for the smaller footprint. You will recall that we are currently discussing with them a permanent easement with respect to entrance and egress on the back on that same portion of the property. That will be forthcoming at a later date. This particular item bringing to you now is just for the easement of during that construction, so it's temporary. To give you an idea of those bounds, you can see if you're north-oriented to where it says Davis, that's obviously the north piece of property, and then it goes east-west for Flora. The over on the left-hand quadrant, the red square, that is the temporary easement for the drainage. And then you can see where the, you know, staging of construction vehicles. It obviously would not encroach any operational efficiency for KUA. It wouldn't impose any risk to us at that point. And so, and historically, we have granted easements to other entities that have done work on or around the property. So it's not uncommon for us to offer this type of easement for this type of work. And again, long-term, KUA would benefit from that connection, because we then have an easement to go out onto Flora, and that provides us. And if you've seen where, you know, the trucks, especially our larger trucks, go out onto John Young, there's no red light there. So at this point, once Flora is completely finalized, we'll have a red light for our trucks to leave the KUA property and get onto John Young. So it'd be a much safer entrance and egress for our vehicles at that point. So with that, and obviously you saw that. Yes, ma'am, Madam Chair.
Is there a document that is drawn that discusses the agreements, or is just verbal?
No, there it should have been on your agenda item. There's a permanent slope easement and a temporary construction easement, which we'll ask the board to exit to approve and execute tonight. Yeah. And the slope easement's permanent. That'll benefit the road for perpetuity.
Thank you.
Thank you. So given the picture there, you can see the what it would look like overhead. And based on the documentation and the work that Grant and his folks have done with the other parties in the agreement, we would recommend to you, the board, the approval of the temporary construction easement agreement and slope easement agreement for the Flora Boulevard Road Extension Project behind the Carroll Street, Davis, and Lackey facilities, and to authorize the board chairman and secretary to execute those agreements. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
I'll make the motion.
So there is, just a second. So there is two agreements, one for the permanent easement and one for the temporary?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair, that is correct.
Are they in housed in one agreement?
No. No, sir. Yeah, they're two separate easements.
So each one has a number, Kevin?
I don't know if they have specific numbers assigned, Madam Chair. The delineation, I think we can make sure you get for the signature piece, but I don't think they have.
The approval is for both?
Yes, ma'am.
It's for each of them, yes ma'am.
Okay, so do I have a motion to approve this? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All against this say nay. There is no nay, so motion approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Second item.
Okay, and second item under new business, Madam Chair, is the award of contract for independent audit services. And Mr. Crawford, talk about that one as well.
For my last trick this evening, I would like to recommend to you, the board, the award of contract for independent audit services. So Purvis Gray has been our auditor for a little while, and we wanted to go back out and do an RFP, a full-blown RFP, to see what else was out there, who else was out there, who was qualified. And to give you some background, For why we do independent audit services, this is required by Section 10 of the KUA Charter. If KUA, and I'm citing the section here, is required to have its financial statements audited annually by a CPA, a certified public accountant, and after completion, a copy of the financial statements and the independent auditor's report are provided to the KUA Board of Directors. You all recall that in February, that's when Mark comes with his team and they present to you the results of the audit, any notes of concern or things that they wanted to bring to the board's attention that they think might be material enough for you to be aware of. We've been very fortunate. We've always had unqualified opinions up to this point, and so we're very pleased with that. They've done a great job, but given the fact that they've been this for a little while, we wanted to go out, and in the interest of fair competition, making sure that we were getting the best value for our customers, put that out on the street. We issued a competitive solicitation in April of this year, and we received a total of 5 responses from different firms. Obviously, one of those firms was Purvis Gray, and they were evaluated by our staff, and Purvis and Gray, fortunately, and company, LLP, was deemed the most responsive and responsible proposal. Incidentally, that team consisted of most our managers, who are all CPAs, one of which has extensive audit experience, Noel, at a previous firm. So we've worked with them, these folks for a while at Purvis and Gray. And so looking at them cost-wise, experience-wise, all the firms had great things that they brought to the table, but far and away, Purvis and Gray had the most experience with municipal utilities, particularly with electrical utilities. We felt very confident. Additionally, they are also the auditors for FMPA, and they are also the auditor for the city of Kissimmee. And so they are well familiar with our business, how we're placed, and what we do, and that adds a tremendous amount of value to the audit with their familiarity with who we are and what we do. And so based on that recommendation from that evaluation team, I would like to recommend for your approval today to award the contract RFP 21039CV for independent audit services to Purvis Gray & Company at a not-to-exceed amount of $306,895 for the initial 3-year term. And then we also have a contract which allows for the 3-year term, which allows for 2 1-year renewals as well, and authorize the chairman and vice chairman to execute those necessary contract documents. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have at this point.
I had a comment, maybe not a question. I can understand that none of the other ones have the experience as, I guess, involved as this one does, but it's because we never give them the opportunity to. We're going to be caught where there is only one company that ever knows us, because that's the only one that knows us. That's the only one that comes here. That's the only one that does the books. And so maybe we should really be prepared to have a second, a backup of some kind at some point in time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an excellent observation. And, yes, it's the AICPA, which is the governing body, the industry that looks a lot of this, they've done a lot of studies. And the conventional wisdom, back when Sarbanes-Oxley, you all recall when that happened, and there was a group formed called the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. And at that time, I think that was, goodness, maybe 10 or 12, 15 years ago, the wisdom that came out of that was that public companies needed to rotate auditors every 5 years. But what they've since done is a lot of research on that to determine, is it really beneficial to switch auditors? And what they've established is that it actually is very beneficial for your auditors who are in that process, because they are familiar with your business. It tends to increase that first year learning curve pretty tremendously. And so absolutely a very good point. And we did look at that. We considered that to see, you know, what their experience level is, and very much so a very good point. And obviously this is a 5-year contract or a 3 with a 1-1 renewal. If we get to that point and the board feels strongly that, we certainly can revisit it if allowing that you would approve this recommendation today. But absolutely a very good point, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So we go into, do I have a motion to approval of the contract?
Second.
Everyone in favor, please say aye. Anyone against it, say nay. There is no one against it. The motion is approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next item is staff reports.
Madam Chair, one staff report this afternoon, and it's the Human Resources semi-annual report. Ms. Cindy Herrera.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Nice to see you. Okay. So, yes, Human Resources semi-annual report. So I'd like to provide, I will be providing a snapshot of data that has been collected as we've worked through the COVID pandemic since March of 2020. And what you're seeing there, I know there's a lot, and actually this was a longer email, but this was our first communication to our workforce, March 5th of 2020, outlining key points to guide our employees as far as what's going on and what was happening. And I felt it was... I needed to bring this up because at that time, Florida only had only four known cases. So a lot's happened since then. Communication was essential from the top down to keep everyone informed of the expectations, and it still remains, but it has been critical and essential during this since last year. And decisions were made to keep our workforce safe and to keep the lights on. This required employees to work from home, report at different meeting locations, and close the lobby. So much has really happened since then. Oops. All right. What you have here in front of you, just a snapshot of, and that was Florida's cases. Again, something not new. We've been seeing this now for over a year. But you can see that peak back in January. So we've felt these peaks just as the state has in Osceola County. In Osceola County, that's more of a clearer recent snapshot there. So in time, as with most organizations, we realized this pandemic was requiring some action. A task force was formed to build out guidelines on how to work through it. We put together return-to-work guidelines that have been used for our workforce in their efforts as COVID was very fluid and dealt with so many unknowns to keep track of. This was daily, actually was daily at some point, if not weekly work for myself and my HR staff who took on these tasks to take care of our most valuable assets, our employees. And I put together just a few noteworthy points I wanted to share. So due to possible exposures with family members, or impossible employee-to-employee, or testing due to feeling ill or traveling guidelines, we had about 263. So this was all tracked. We had to know was there a possible exposure, contact tracing, what did this look like, who else was involved. So a lot, not only my staff, HR, obviously as an organization, departments, managers, and employees all coming together to make sure we kept each other safe. Our first possible exposure was in March of 2020, and since then, as I mentioned, 263 that have been tracked. All these exposures required contact tracing to ensure containment, along with coordination of sanitizing, if needed, of the workspace. Our first positive employee was not until June. At June of 2020. And to date, we've had just 33 employees. These positives required four employees that were hospitalized, but glad to report no deaths, and they all have returned to work. Everybody's doing well. And all these positive exposures and all these positive cases were due to outside of the work contraction. So it didn't happen in the workplace. It was all from the outside. So again, our safety measures that we put in place came to light as it was not spread within the organization. And since last year, we've required travel to be reported. So, travel to New York. It changed so much over the years, but it required tracking. And some even required some testing requirements. So starting in March of last year, we had a total, since then, 355 recordings of travel. due to destination of travel. It may have required testing or quarantine, and this has changed over with time, and again, updated with our return to work guidelines. And glad to report to date, we have 110 employees who have voluntarily notified us of their vaccination. So there could be more, but we don't. It's not mandate. You know, we don't require you that you, if you share it with us, and we have incentives. And so about 38% of our workforce. And this goes along, actually matches pretty in line when we do our flu shots, right around the same number of employees. Moving on to safety. This year, we were very, very proud and excited. We received the RP3 Plant Diamond Award designation for the first time. This was for our reliability, safety training, and system improvements. HR supports the safety and training program efforts. That's why I'm bringing this up again. Earlier this year, I reported on our safety record, noting 2020 was the best year in our incidents in the last 20 years. So this obviously did bring all that together. And our workforce dedication to overall improvement is what has made this award possible for us. We also received FMEA's third best safety record, and this has been consecutive since 2017. A couple other areas in safety, just a few training areas that we do cover. We have monthly departmental meetings, which include multiple departments that may come in depending on the topic. So this is done monthly. We do have monthly safety matters sent out to all the employees, and that's just a little snippet of some of the ones that we send out throughout the year monthly. Fire extinguisher training, post-accident training, CPR, first aid, AED, on-site inspections, again, just a few of the trainings and areas that we cover. And most importantly here, we're 100% compliant with all drug and alcohol testing requirements for our CDL drivers and our pipeline workers. Moving on to financial wellness, which is an important part of being healthy as an employee. In addition to our pension retirement plan, HR supports the efforts to promote financial wellness overall. We continue to have both pre-tax and post-tax options with our record keeper Empower, which is our 457, and more than half of our employees currently contributing contributing to this. And our account representative currently had been doing Zoom meetings because of COVID, but now we're working on having them come back on site for our employees. We do have a financial wellness program. This was through the Participant Effect, which has been rebranded to WellSense. And based on an assessment that went out to all of our workforce, it was a month campaign, and we do this every year, to review top areas of concern, set up a free financial review with an advisor. Along with this, quarterly workshops include retirement planning, based off of the assessment, then we put together workshops which include retirement planning, debt reduction, budget planning, and others. And again, we just did an assessment, and we had about a 43% participation, and our consultant said the average is about 25 to 35 with their clients. So we are definitely trending high in that. And some other areas that we provide assistance is through our employee assistance program on financial, and that's through Cigna and LifeWorks. Okay. So have a what's new in HR? NeoGov. And so NeoGov, HR's continued to utilize the NeoGov platforms, which include applicant tracking, along with training. So this is online, and we're using different platforms through them, and we just launched our pre-boarding online portal. And what that looks like, just to give you a little snapshot, what you're seeing here is our welcome page. And these are for employees who have just been offered a job, and we need to start completing the requirement documents. Previously, you'd have to come on in, spend some time with us, sign your life away, and so physically come into HR. So it has been configured and designed by my HR staff and can easily be updated. We utilized it for the first time 2 weeks ago, so this is really new, and we're really excited about it. This new product allows for efficiency of completion of new hired documents, decreased time for them to give their notice, and allowing for a quicker start date with us. So overall, very efficient in reducing that time for when someone can start.
We should probably find a picture, if that's the welcome page, with someone that's smiling.
That's a nice picture there, Brian. That's nice. So what I'm showing here, so we, along with the employee, are able to track the items by seeing their checklist and seeing how it shows the new employee where they are in their checklist of forms to complete this. At that point, Mr. Lamont there had a checklist, and he was about 60% done when I did this. So it's really easy for both employee and for HR to track that. Plus, it allows employees to get a feel and see firsthand what KUA is about before physically starting. So that moves into when they do start. So that was the pre-boarding, and now we have the onboarding of the new hire. And so what that kind of looks like, and I pieced together a few pieces here. So once the employee starts, then they move through the onboarding portion, which provides them access to more about KUA policy and procedures, training items that may be required. Again, using that checklist item, that timeline, that items that they have been assigned, ethics training, driver's training, signing of different forms. So a lot of just great information. Again, we're really excited. This is something new, and we've had now about 3 total employees that we just new hires that we're sending this through. So we're working through that. And coming later this year is our online pension administration system, which will allow active members to access their pension information online. So moving forward to a lot more easier accessibility for information for employees. And last but not least here is our risk management, which is key to identifying and assessing and mitigating our risk on multiple areas. So, I mentioned earlier, we take care of our employees, which is our most valuable assets, but we also need to take care of our property, which are huge assets out there. So our risk administrator coordinates these loss control liability audits, Everest, along with loss control, survey inspections with our general liability and work comp carrier, and our property carrier. And one of the other things that risk management works with closely is our legal procurement and safety. And we insure over about $148 million of coverage on our property. So big assets there. Any questions?
Thank you.
I have a question regarding the numbers of people impacted by COVID. 2020 was like 20 people, I think, and 2021 is 13 already.
Yes.
Higher, apparently, in 2021.
It actually started, we had a higher number in January when you saw that peak. We had quite a few employees in January and February, and it's tailed off. We actually had last month, June, was the month that we have not had any positive case since last year. So that has definitely tapered off, and we hope that continues and we can see some more zero on the months on our positive cases. Yes.
Good. Thank you. Okay. So we go now to hear the attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good evening, Madam Chair, board members. Just a couple items for you. First, I wanted to let the board know, I think I mentioned earlier, that we had been appropriately and insightfully tasked with reviewing over 500 of our internal departmental policies and procedures. That review has been complete. Revisions where there were some recommendations for revisions to policies, those are also in the works. Happy to report that the overwhelming majority of policies and procedures were fine. There was nothing that needed fixing. But there were some areas that we found some departments needed to make sure they were complying with their own review dates. If you have a policy and you say you're going to review it every 1 or 2 years or 3 years, make sure that there is an indication you've done it. A lot of times folks have. They just forget to notate it. You know, there were some risk gaps that we felt we could tighten up, especially now that COVID had happened. There were some areas where we could tighten some language within our policies. And some policies were no longer needed. They're obsolete. So we recommended those being removed, and we updated policies to reflect our actual experiences. It was a really great team effort, collaborative effort with every single department and their administrative staffs. Jennifer, the Assistant General Counsel, did an outstanding job getting that together. And then finally, no news, unfortunately, on infrastructure in terms of an actual bill passing. I did want the board to know that the bipartisan infrastructure bill that the president has been working with and these other 21 Democrats and Republican senators, it's a $529 billion additional funding on top of what's already been proposed. It would include $7.5 billion for electric vehicle infrastructure. And I would hope that some of that might find its way here. But it's a long way from happening yet. But just want to let you know that that's what's going on there. I stand for any questions.
Good. So we should all buy ourselves an electric vehicle now.
There you go.
No questions? Anybody?
No.
General Manager?
Yes, I think we've got the reminders up there. I'm looking forward to spending some time with those of you that will be attending the FMEA conference later this month. Should be a really good conference. And you all should have seen the water jugs that were placed at your seats. We've been voluntold that we're going to participate in KUA's wellness activity here, so drink plenty of fluids there. And then lastly, you know, oftentimes you guys do a wonderful job of praising staff who does an amazing job. Thank you for everything you do. But I just wanted to thank the board for everything that you guys do, because it's an unpaid appointment. Oftentimes there are things that come up in y'all's personal lives that you have to contend with and professionally as well, yet you're here and you're still doing the people's work, so we thank you for that.
You're welcome. Quite welcome. I wanted to especially thank the staff this time, because I'm sure the public and us, we all heard FMPA CEO tell us how wonderful KUA is and how wonderful KUA does and all of the savings that we are able to get and pass on to our customers, and that's the purpose of our company. So therefore, congratulations to everyone. Very proud of you. Very, very proud of everyone. I think we deserve a big applause for those results. Yes, Brian.
Sure. We did welcome back. A few months ago, we had an item that we brought to you guys to address the compensation for our linemen that was called active duty. He returned to us last week, and we welcomed him back, Mr. Riley. He's up there, so just it's nice to have him back.
Yes, congratulations, welcome back. So, any other questions, managers, directors, anybody, mayor? No. Then. Thank you very much, everyone. Meeting adjourned.